What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Orale Bull Heights. Today, I'm in an undisclosed location with the homie Steve. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Introduce yourself to folks. Let them know what you're about.
All right. My name is Steve Campos. We're at my shop today. I guess we're doing a little podcast.
Some questions. Are.
Thank you.
We are, man. I mean, it's essentially just like a conversation hanging out, but with microphones in front of our mouths.
This is kind of interesting. I mean, this is what conversation should be like.
It's, dude, I mean, if
I think it would carry a little bit more. You're like, fuck, I gotta really say something here now.
No, I was just gonna say, like, sometimes to make people feel more comfortable, part of that is to, like, meet them where they are, like, at your studio, right? But also, you know, we can always, like, get a beer or something.
Perfect.
You know, makes the mouth a little looser.
Yeah, well, I feel really comfortable right here.
It's your safe space.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited. Thanks again, dude.
Appreciate you giving me
the time, you know, to come, like, hang out with you and chop it up and get to know you a little better. Because we've been around the bike spaces and we've kind of known around each other for a while. But I don't think I've ever had, like, an opportunity to just sit down with you one-on-one and, like, really chop it up.
Yeah, man. No, I've seen, like, all the work that you've been doing and everything. I was like, and then especially all the characters you come up with. Dude, it's too funny, man.
Those are just my personalities.
Yeah, those are great. They're great personalities.
But, to get things started, you were just at EDC.
Yeah.
What were you, well, first, let folks know what it is. And then, like, what were you doing there?
It was a Electric Daisy Carnival.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas. And I got picked up by a vendor to build some chandeliers for Artist Lounge. And I have this bender, this roller here that I picked up. And it's actually the first, like, couple jobs that I've been able to produce with that. Making these giant chandeliers that were getting covered in fabric. And then, like, tassels. They just look like giant. Do you remember the lamp from Christmas Story?
Yeah, the leg.
It was like that. It was basically like tulips where they bent up and then they have frails on the end.
That's dope.
And they had disco balls inside of them and then lights and stuff.
Very
like that.
Very interactive. Yeah. Like, they're setting a vibe.
Yeah, I guess for a carnival, for a party like that, it was really nice.
And then it's usually just like rave music, right? Like electronic music?
Yeah, a lot of electronic music. Man, they had so many different, like, you would walk into the center of this whole, like, speedway, and you would just hear music bumping to the left, to the right, and
yeah,
it was just insane.
It feels like it could be very overwhelming, like,
that
type of festival.
It was, yeah. It was one of those things that I knew going in that I was going to get overwhelmed, because I already know myself pretty well. And I was like, you know what? I should just go by myself, because I'm going to be, like, just panicking. And then, like, it's just a lot going on, and you can get lost real quick. They had these interesting things. I mean, about the rave culture, I never went to it, and I always thought it was past my time. I was like, oh man, I was always around people like, Steve, you need to work. You know, that's stuff for, like,
get a job.
Yeah, get a job. And I was like, and I always had the opportunities to go to these things, but I would always pass on them. And I decided to go this time, and I'm very grateful that I did. I'm like, wow, this is cool. Like, I love the music.
I love the
space. And, like, it looked like everybody was doing something, and there was no judgment at all. Like,
no.
People were doing all
that's
kinds
one of those things. I mean, same. I've never been to it. That's not my scene.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like one of those things where folks are just out there doing their thing, flying their flag.
Yes.
You know, literally, like, flying a flag out there.
Exactly.
Which turned into, like, memes and stuff like that, which I've seen online.
Oh, man.
And then that picture you posted on your Instagram of, like, we accept EBT.
Yes, so they have these totem poles, and it's, like, so you can find where your friends are at in case you get lost. And I was just, like, cracking up. It was, like, we accept EBT. And there's a giant robot with boobs, like, sitting
and
down.
Flames, like a fucking flamethrower.
Yes, the flames and everything. And I was, like, cracking up. I was like, wow, this is I want to go hang out with those people. And I never got to the front to go check it out.
But that takes a mission to get up there.
Oh yeah, you gotta push, like, and then the funny thing is, like, your backpack will get tangled up with other people.
Oh, you're that, like, that close to
you
people?
Are,
you're just,
you're,
like,
squished. You're squished, and you're trying to get up there. And, like, if you don't go up there with water, you probably just dehydrate.
Stranded. Imagine you gotta go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you gotta hold it in. You gotta. But, yeah, it was really intense. It was an experience, and I think I'm definitely going to try to go back. And, you know, I've always told myself I would go to these events if I was working and then I would be, because I can't party for like 8 hours. Like, I mean, at the most, it's like 3 hours. Then I want to go home, you know? I think I'm old.
Sensible.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
cool.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Hell yeah. Were you doing anything else in Vegas while you were there?
I took my bike and I rode down the strip.
Nice.
And, like, being able to, like, ride my bike comfortably, aggressively in traffic and, like, still feel like I was like, okay, I learned this from riding with Midnight Riders, all my old, you know, my friends from different bike groups. And I was like, okay, I learned this skill of, like, holding your lane and just, like, making sure people don't buzz you.
Looking yeah, beside yeah, you. Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So it was really fun. I went out there, rode around. I went and did the Las Vegas thing. I went to a gun range, shot some guns.
That's one thing I haven't done in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. I think that they have all the guns there. They have all the guns there. For the most part, it was just like went to, you know, did some gambling, just stuff, a little bit of stuff, and just, you know, went to go eat some nice places.
Yeah, did you have any highlights for your food?
Boca de Beppo.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was cool. I was going to go try to find a bagel because I was craving a bagel, and then I ran into Boca de Beppo. And I was really looking at the numbers and the portion price, the portion sizes. I was like, this is the deal right
here. This adds up right here.
This is where it's like, I'm like, I'm not going to let Vegas win this time,
yeah,
you know?
Hell yeah, dude. I went last year on the way to visit my family in another state through Vegas. And so I stopped there overnight as part of my birthday trip, and I ended up going to Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that shit's
Did they
so...
have Ramsay there yelling at people?
Nah, I wish. That would have made it fucking more spectacular.
Oh, bro, that's great. It's just, yeah, yeah. In the kitchen, I remember, like, the people who, like, run their kitchen. Like, I remember being in my brother's family's house and trying to walk into the kitchen and just being like, pa'fuera, pa'fuera. They're like,
get out of the way.
Yeah, get out of the way. You're not doing anything. You know, I was like, oh, shit. They should have a show for them, you know. My family relatives.
Comedy. Yes. Just everybody ripping on each other.
Oh, God. And like, people would be crying. People would be crying. They're like, oh.
That's what gets ratings.
They asked me to go get repollo, and I brought back fucking lechuga.
You get parsley instead of cilantro?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing that you grow up with. You're like, we sent you to do one thing, man.
Well, I was just telling somebody how I was. I think now that I'm older, I'm definitely grateful I had the opportunity to be part of those kids that would be sent to the corner store to go get something like a soda, tortillas, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'd be like an hour, 2 hours late because I was like playing video games in the maquinita. Like, kids. And like, where the fuck were you, bro?
Dude, my parents didn't let me out of my. I grew up right there on 37 and Marmion Way. And my parents would not let me out because it was like there was a lot of activity going on outside. And
yeah. Like, no. What was this, like the 90s?
Fuck. I was like, yeah, 90s. I was going to Irving Middle School, and I guess the only time I would walk back was with my mom from Mount Washington because she got us into the school. We got into a raffle, and they're like, we're taking you from Loretto to Mount Washington.
Dang.
It was really interesting because I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, wait a minute, what happened to all my other friends? You know, like,
yeah.
It felt different. It felt a little different. It definitely was more affluent. And I guess that's what my mom wanted us to go to.
Your mom looking out for you.
Yeah. She actually worked there. So it was kind of like cool because she was like one of the people that take care of the kids during PE, like during recess. The
like
yard attendants.
Supervisor or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, she had like a job like that. And it was kind of funny because she would always keep an eye on us. I was like, oh man, we can't do it, you know?
And they got a walkie talkie with them.
Yes, they had a walkie talkie.
So, like, if you were trying to do something, like somebody's like out here, hey, your son's over here acting.
I don't
cool.
know if it was that involved, but I remember my mom was friends with the principal, Miss Lovitz, I think it was her name. She was really nice. They really were really cool people. And my mom got us into that school, and my brother was there, and he would like, those are like the talent shows that they had. I still remember the song, you know, like we are the children
you sing
of
that
Mount
too?
Washington.
What the?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Because I was in elementary school and they made us sing the Michael Jackson one.
Oh, dope. Like, see, that sounds cool, man. What?
With a little choreography of hands and all in front of the whole fucking school. I was like, oh, man, like y'all just made me hate MJ now.
No. Yeah, that was a really interesting, like, just growing up around there. And it's, like, being sent. Like, I remember in Irving, my brother was taking care of us. He's like, why don't you ride your bike to school? So I was, like, they actually encouraged me before I even started, like, going on bike rides to ride my bike from 37 all the way to Irving. So I would take like cypress and all those trees that would like bulge up the concrete on my way back. That was a fun part of driving back. I would just hit those things and just try to launch off them like I'm getting home, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, well, depending on what bike I have, I'll be able to do that because I can't do that on my road bike. I'm just going to fuck it up.
Dude, I had like a Toys R Us, like Pacific, but Pacific with shocks, and it was pretty dope. Yeah, it was a pretty cool bike.
Yeah, dude.
And yeah, it was really fun. Just like and all this stuff, I never thought I would do, like ride my bike to school, my brothers, like, you know, all that stuff. Like even my brothers were like, they were always into art and music. So nice. They taught us
like
about
older
that
brothers,
stuff.
Younger brothers?
The older brothers, you know, like older brothers would be really great at, like, they're very charismatic, and we'd always just, like, self, like, a lot of them, you know, they're only, I remember my brother just setting up an office in the living room and just, like, taking calls and making calls. So I was always around, like, that kind of energy of, like,
hustling.
Yeah, dude, something. Like, my dad was working in the back, like, we had a metal shop in the backyard where, like, in the garage, and basically the grinder, the chop saw was right next to the window of our room. And we would hear it early in the morning. Yeah, dude.
Damn.
I think we had it easy. My older brothers, they had to go help my dad quite a bit.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, I know that.
They would... I'm the oldest of four.
Oh, shit.
So I joke with the homie who's like, he just turned 11 years old. It's like, when I was your age, I had two jobs.
Yeah, man. They used to tell me stories that they would be like walking into... houses on Saturday and seeing the kids watching, like seeing other kids watching cartoons, and they were there helping my dad.
Dude, that's me. That's me, man. Like when your family has its own business or hustle, like it's that old school mentality of like how my parents were like in their families. Like,
yeah.
You're here not because of love and like all these other nice feelings. You're here to work, motherfucker.
I know.
You're here to contribute.
It was interesting. Yeah, man. I was like, I mean, that's why me and my little brother, we didn't really get that too much, but we still were like, okay, we gotta, you know, like, it was always around us. Like all that stuff, all that metalwork and all that stuff was around us. And it was like, my dad would like, we wouldn't take the time to teach us. He's like, if you want to learn, you learn. And it was always there. And it was just so funny. I was like, yeah. It was, you know, like, you know, did you learn this from your pops? Like, I learned seeing him work every day.
Visual learner.
Yeah, and I was just like, by seeing how hard he was working, I was like, well, you know, out of high school, I was like, what am I going to do? And I go, well, you know, my dad came here, was able to buy a house, was able to raise four kids. And at that time, probably it was a lot cheaper. But
he was able
to do that. Yeah. I was like, I guess out of high school, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to pursue doing metal work and kind of just like kept going from there. Like it was really
insane. Did your family like ever be like, because my parents, especially my mom and dad, obviously, they were like, you know, don't do what we do. Like go to school and get an education and be successful and, you know, get like a professional job. So they would always tell me like, so you don't have to work as hard as we do.
You know what? None of that stuff. Like, even up to like the culture that like my dad and my parents really never brought us up with like, oh, why are we going to, you know, like why are we going to church? Like, why is this so important? And we just would go, and it was just like a thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just like, None of them ever told us, like, oh, I want you to, you know,
be a doctor
or something like that. It was never just like, you're here, and this is better than over there, I guess. And it's like, you know, whatever, you know, there was no prep to go to college or something like that. All that was really much more done by my older brothers who would, like, kind of keep an eye out for us.
Did they go to school?
They went to school. They went to Franklin. They went to Loretto, Nightingale.
They got around.
Yeah. They around this area.
Did they end up going to college?
One of my brothers did. I think he's like an English, like almost like, I think as far as able to be a teacher. But,
all right.
You know, he's now doing technical writing and he's a really smart guy, man. He was the one that taught me a lot about like You know, I would go to his room because he had these cool books. I was like, I learned about Marth Rothko. I don't even know. Seeing these strange paintings of like two tones, I was like, that's art. You know, like that's interesting.
Magic eye and shit.
Yeah, yeah, really weird stuff. You know, it was like, it was really cool. Like that's why I always say it's like being the older brother, you have to teach the, you know, other people about music, and then like you kind of
put them onto game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And really appreciative about my older brothers, you know, because. And I think it would have been a little bit more difficult if I didn't learn about a way to express myself with, you know, using art and making stuff with my hands and, like, seeing that. It was all in the backyard, and I was, like, this whole time, it was, like, I went to trade school for a little bit, then I was, like, man, I got to go to work, you know? Like, I need to go make money. I can't just be stuck here.
Those pressures, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Dang, so, dude. How was the neighborhood going up back then? Because, you know, it seems like your parents were, like, trying to keep an eye on you, keep you safe, put you in good schools and stuff like that. Did you ever, like, just get out there and, like, try to do your own thing? Like maybe, like, you were pressured into getting into trouble or anything like that?
You know what? I had a lot of friends that were kind of like on doing their own thing outside, and then when they finally let me go out, you know, they're like, okay, you go ride your bike and whatever. It was really
kind of like an age thing. You're old enough to do this
something
now.
Like that. I guess they just felt more safe. They're like, because, you know, right there on 37 there was like two back streets that connected everybody, and there was like a little place called La Ranchito. It was like this little cottage house, and it would just split, and then like every time there was some kind of like either some kind of something going down with the avenues, that you would always get them running through the backyards.
You know? And it
was
no
like,
way.
Yeah, it was like, and it was a pretty good place for them to like dump a car and then just run through the neighborhood and then get away from whatever. And that corner street, now it's like, it used to be an old bakery, but now it's like an architect firm. Like, I think it might be Terremoto.
Interesting.
It's interesting, man. I was like, what the fuck? They used to sell birria out of this place, you know?
You should go in there and tell them that.
I did. I went into their opening, and I was being kind of loud. And I was like, hey, what happened to such and such? It's like, oh, you know, they kind of, you know, yeah, they, people, you know, once they got the property, they know what they wanted to do with it, you know? So it's just like, and I talked to old friends, I was like, hey, man, do you know if they gave them a chance to stay there? They're like, no, they kind of booted them out. And I was like, fuck. You know, like that one guy who lived up there, he one time was like, he was really like tough guy. And cool guy, him and his family. But like, I guess you kind of become a product of your environment and you just kind of get stuck. You know, all these friends I remember my friend Pepe, and like all these kids around the block who ended up like tag banging and getting into the neighborhood, like they're no longer around anymore. Like even the tire company that was down the street by the, I forgot the name of the liquor store, like that whole family, ese señor, like all his kids are like no longer here.
Damn.
Yeah, dude. They would post up in front of that same house, and like every week you would see like holes into the cinder blocks. And I was like, what? Like they just posted up, bro. They're just kicking it there. And I was like, I remember a lot of those kids were actually pretty nice, you know, but, you know, it was like one of the things they got into. And I wonder if it was, like, it's kind of lifestyle. Yeah.
Life happens, man. So many things like go into transition.
But the neighborhood was like, you know, you wouldn't go through the back, Carlota, you wouldn't go like through the back. I remember like actually getting fucking beat up by, I was trying to be a tagger, and I was like going around hanging out with my friends. And I was like, oh fuck, why am I hanging out with my friend? He was always going around selling drugs.
Oh shit.
And I was just like, I was just being an observer, like in his car, and just like he would go, and there would be people coming out with dishes and like, oh, like just strung out, dude. And it was like mothers trying to pawn off like dishes. And dang. I was like, why am I doing this? Like, it was an experience, and I think I kind of like going to those things, so like to firsthand see these things. But yeah, it was tough, man. Like that person, like, I guess he might not be around anymore. His whole family kind of just like disappeared. Yeah, really good people, man. But it's just like hanging out with them and seeing all that, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm cut out for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I'm that same kind of learner. Sometimes I need to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
To really make that point.
I stopped tagging because I was like, if I can't jump a fence and run away, I got to stop tagging. My brother's still out there doing his whole thing. He's all like, he sent me photos of him. He's like, Steve, I'm up on the tower in downtown, you know, the graffiti tower.
Yeah.
And I was like, bullshit. And me mandó unas fotos of him laying down. I was like, whoa.
Hey.
This was on the 32nd floor up there.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I think they should keep that thing. They should just rent. Let's turn it into, like, affordable housing, keep it all mobbed up, and just, like, just continue. Like, it's already done. They're going to spend a bunch of money just painting over it. Like, just keep it. It'll look cool, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? But it's to me, I was like, yeah, that's our 5 points, like in New York and shit, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking dope. But, no, so with growing up in the neighborhood with, you know, literally, like, what you do now, being in your backyard through your dad, what trade school did you end up going to?
I went to Trade Tech in downtown.
Hell yeah, Trade Tech.
You too?
Yeah,
yeah, man. That thing was cool, man. I really enjoyed it. I was a Mr. Chansey, all these really, like, amazing teachers out there, and the facility was great, man. It's just like running plate and just welding over and over and over and looking at what it does differently with different currents and, like, upside down, sideways, all this shit.
Yeah, you know, man, a lot of technical aspects.
Yeah, and it's to some point, you're like, now you just hear it and you know it's good. You know, you can just, without even looking at it, sometimes you're like, okay, that worked.
Hell yeah.
So Trade Tech was where I went. I, like, was just full of anxiety of trying to just get going. Didn't really want to, like, I learned as much as I could real quick, and then I just went off and just got a job. Like, I ended up meeting some local artists in Lincoln Heights that did the River Gates on Fletcher.
Nice.
Yeah, Brett
Hell
Goldstone
yeah,
and James Nash, and a lot of them. I ended up actually renting a little room there, and so I also worked for them, so it was, like, really, like, I couldn't miss a day. There was no excuse. They're like, you're not sick.
An immersive experience.
Yeah, man. You're like, what are you doing over here? And now that place has got developed. It's like, it's on Barranca, right across St. Vincent's. And that taco spot, Maya's?
It was El Maya.
El Maya, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm in Trade Tech, and then went and got some jobs in some muffler shops, just some, like, fencing companies, like the same thing my dad did. And then, like, eventually I started getting a space, like, what is it? My old partner, she got me a night classes at Art Center. And
Ooh.
I started developing, like, just, I wanted to make furniture because that was the course, you know, making furniture. And I remember I was like, okay, how much did this cost? I'm going to try to make 5 pieces so I could recover. And I was just, because I told myself I'm going to make 5 pieces, I made them really fast. And I learned a lot about, like, my scale and how I was approaching things, and it was just kind of just fun, just making different things like that.
Oh yeah, dude! With you going to school and then picking it up, did your dad or, like, did you, like, ever be like, I should go work with him?
It was very difficult to work with that man. all my brothers tried, and it was like, you know, sometimes some welders got some egos, man. They got some, like, it's like a godlike complex, because they're like, I built this bridge. I was like, or whatever, you know. It's
just, I was jokingly gonna ask, like, do you go around judging people's welds?
I don't, more than anything, I kind of look at, I guess at one point I did, but it's like, it was just, I didn't like it. I'm like, well, whatever. It was more important to learn to be able to get to be clever and figure problem solve.
Mm.
Like, you know, welding isn't everything about welding. It's like fabricating. Like, can you make these shapes without these special tools? Like, always having to send it out to get rolled or bent or stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So a lot I've learned was hot bending with a hot rolled material, which is a lot easier to bend versus, like, cold rolled. And stuff like that, you know, it's like just being able to do it manually, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of ingenuity, like being clever.
Yeah,
you know,
dude.
Like, sometimes it's that Mickey Mouse solution to something.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, it's so funny. Like, my dad used to be like, boom, 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 vamos, 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 like really hustle, bustle. But then it's like seeing, like, the way he would fix things. I remember one time on the American Apparel building, I wanted to go help him. He smoked a lot of weed. And we went up to the top, and he was working on a fucking elevator shaft. And I was like, what the? Dad, who gave you this job? You know, why are you working on an elevator shaft? It wasn't the shaft itself, but it was the casing on the top that held the motor. And I think he had a special rod. That's when I started learning about different rods that produce different kinds of welds for a little bit more, like, you know, for different applications here. It's like you just have to identify what it's made out of and then just kind of try to mix the two together.
Like the strength or like what it's going to be holding
exactly,
together.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I was one of those things working, going to school, and like I used to work at a security job thinking, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And
you just need cash, man.
Yeah, you just need cash. And then I was like, after a while, like meeting these artists, I was like, you know what? I can do this metal work that my dad was doing, but I can apply it and work with artists. And that was where it clicked for me. I was like, you know what? This is my career now. Like, I need to further develop it and, like, either get some more, like, you know, right now I'm going to go teach myself some AutoCAD programming so I can be able to, like sit down in a meeting, do some light sketching, figure out what people want, go off for a bit, and produce some drawings. You know, and the benefit of that is because I can make the thing, but the disconnection between being a technical drafter and not a builder, you foresee a lot of problems and you can address them right there and then.
You set yourself up for success.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. That's a great way. Like, and it's so beautiful that you were able to combine two different experiences, right? Like the experience that your dad had and kind of in some ways passed down to you and your brothers of the work he did. But then you're like, I can take this to another level or take it somewhere else that he didn't want to take.
And you know what? And it all was when I started working with those artists in Lincoln Heights, because I was like, they were making mountains and birds and blade leaves from the river.
Yeah, I've
seen that. Like incorporating,
that game is super cool.
Yeah, incorporating rocks into them and just like really just having like this really fun, wild style of like producing these metal gates. I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And like right now I'm working on like a couple things. I need to get like a decorative metalwork contractor's license under this other company that I have. It's called Steel Fabricated Arts. Yeah. And it's more focused on like the furniture stuff and like decorative gates. And I just want to make different style decorative gates. Like,
dude, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I think for me took a while for me to catch on to, like the artistry, right? Like the design aspect of like a lot of the built environment that we grew up on. Because, you know, now as an older person than I used to be, I'm like, man, those gates and like the design of the gates that we used to grow up with, like in different spaces with like horses and roses and all these motifs. I was like, that shit kind of like hits like in a different nostalgic way now.
Definitely. I've been seeing a lot of artists use that and to incorporate it into their work. And it's interesting because like my dad used to do that back in the day.
Even like the bars that you put
the
up.
Bar windows. Yeah, dude. I remember my dad business blew up when Richard Ramirez was spotted in the neighborhood. His company blew
Shut up.
Yes. Everybody wanted bar windows. And my brothers and everyone was like, dude, his business blew up. You know, everybody wanted safety. And like, it's kind of weird. Like, wow. Like my dad sold people safety, you know, like it
dude,
was the creating partitions.
Wild.
And even now, like I'm like, you know, I've been wanting to make stuff with those pieces and incorporated all that stuff into new pieces that I'm making. But like, I remember getting called into Highland Park and having new homeowners being like, hey, can we hire you to remove these bar windows? And I was like, interesting. It's like the neighborhood definitely
it's changing.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I'm just barely realizing right now. Like I currently live in a home with no bar windows.
It's nice, right? Yeah.
Like, it's different.
Yeah. And then like now I remember getting called in to make the horizontal fencing, the gentrification fences. And I was like, a la madre. Then my dad would probably be like, ¿qué estás haciendo? He used to think of like the corrugated sheeting. He like, my dad would be like, it looks like a ladder. People can just climb the fence over. And I guess now it's more like you see all these really beautiful groomed like front yards and
like,
there's still a partition.
Native, like plants and
yeah,
stuff like
it's still a partition. And it's like, I've noticed that like people still want to invite you to come and like stand, you know, and just, you know, like appreciate their garden. But it's like, it's all like tailored and groomed. And I know people like, they took a like, oh, those fences was a telltale sign of like things changing. And like most of them came from like flippers who people didn't really care. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people that I've worked with who like really wanted to spend a little bit more money to make them nicer. And it was just interesting to see that like my dad got paid to put these up and now I get paid to remove
that's
them.
That's wild, yeah. Dude. That's the big sign of the changing of the times.
Yeah,
and
how
people feel safe, how they don't feel safe. And even, because I've seen, like, from, like, when I was looking through your Instagram, you you know, you do like a lot of dope ass designs when people want like those metal like doors for their their like homes and stuff like that. And even like the design you did for the Fools at Fabrica de Rosas.
Yeah.
Like a clothing stand made from those actual like
material, man,
from those fences.
That was pretty cool. Like I went to go meet up with him, Jimmy. And I was kind of like, I didn't know what he wanted. And then he brought it up and I was like, really? This you want to make something like this? I was like really intrigued. I was like, yes, okay. So I started listening and I was like, okay. I told him, I was like, all right, I know the perfect thing. I know what you want. Like, you know, built it in panels, painted it, rusted it out to make it look like it's been there forever.
Yeah.
And then like a little table.
That table is fucking clean.
Yeah. No, that was fun. It was like, that was something that I think they're called Grecas. And then I think they're in every, like every raza has them, like, you know, the Egyptians, like the Greeks,
frets. I've been wanting those, one of those fucking tables for so long. Anytime somebody goes to Mexico, I was like, hey, can you like look for one of these? I don't care if it's Tecate, Squirt,
The Veranda,
Victoria, whatever. Like, I want one of these fucking tables and like sets for like my own.
I think you have to make a road trip to Tijuana to go pick them up or something. I don't know where you're going to find them, dude. Taco stands, we were like, just take the whole taco table.
Yeah, because when I went to Mexico last year, I was like, man, I wish I could have one of these tables at fucking home.
They're really nice. That was, for me, talking about nostalgia, I remember just like going to Mexico with my parents, Acapulco, like all these little spots you would post up to go eat food, they were always there.
Yeah.
They were always there.
Yeah, because I'm like, man, this is, like, because right now, because I'm a fucking fatty.
Same here, man.
I got a small folding table that can just, I put in the trunk of my car, so that way when I go like go eat somewhere, I'm like, oh, there's nowhere to sit. Let me open up my trunk, pull out the table, bam.
Oh, man.
I got somewhere to fucking eat. And so that's what I would do with like a table like that. Just keep it in the car.
Keep it in the car.
You know, go to the picnic, go to the park, whatever. Like, I'm just getting tacos. Cool. Like, open up the trunk, pop up the table, bam.
Yeah, it's always nice to have a kit like that in your car.
Yeah.
Because you never know. You're like, that looks like a good spot to post stuff.
Like, why am I going to struggle trying to eat on the fucking hood of the car when I can just get a table? Take my time.
Bring your own quinceañera setup and shit.
Yeah, dude. Like, I'm all about comfort these days.
Oh, man. I think that happens when you're like getting older, right? Like, I'm like a 38. I was like, I want more comfort in my life.
I want practicality, comfort, stability. Why am I trying to do things the hard way?
I guess when you start when you find yourself shopping at REI in your 30s, you're like, fuck, that's it, dude. I'm a member now.
I gotta get the lumbar support.
You know, I love this gear. I don't even go hiking. I'm like, I wear it.
But yeah, I mean, so that's part of your practice now, right? Is like, you obviously do your own stuff, and you're like, damn, I just thought of this. Let me see if I can make this into reality. But more and more, so I see you're putting the flag out there. You're like, who wants to work with me? Who has ideas? You know, who wants to make something happen?
I guess it's always been a thing of like building up confidence within myself and just being like, you know what, okay, yeah, this is what I want to do. And like just being able to just like, yeah, it's just that confidence, man. It's just building up that confidence. Like, I could build a lot of other stuff, but sometimes the harder thing is that part of you that you're like, I'm like, man, you know, building yourself up a little bit more, you know,
just
like
confidence.
And then like, you know, I mean, like, I always thought like, oh man, I needed to go to art school and this and like that. And then I realized, I was like, some of my friends who went to art school find what I do a little bit more interesting than what they do. Like, engineers, I was like, really, dude? Like, you're a fucking engineer. Like, I just put metal together, you know?
But that's the difference, right, in terms of, like, the perspective of how we see ourselves. Because, yeah, people, like, hype me up about, like, damn, Eric, you do this, this, and that. It's like, bro, I just do it because it's fun. I like doing this stuff. You know, like, the whole podcast thing is, like, I love doing this, like getting to talk to people and get to hear their stories and
it's
stuff
like that.
It's a
very social activity, I have to say.
It's like, you know, the technical side of it is to me, hey, Adele. Hi.
Are you guys doing?
Yeah. How are you?
Feel free to interrupt. It's all good.
Hey.
I'll check in.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye,
Adele.
that's exactly what I wanted to happen.
Yeah, that's Adele. She was the one who hired me to build those things out for EDC.
Oh,
yeah, that was fun. I mean, this whole time she's been my neighbor, and like I'm telling you, I never wanted to go to these events because I was like, es cosa de güero. Like I don't want to go to that shit. I'm low key. It was like had my own biases about this. Like I don't want to go to Burning Man.
I feel that.
Yeah,
I
was like, I'm gonna just that, like, you know. But it's the same. It was just all in my head, you know.
It's
it was all
change of perspective. It's like growing into your own. Yeah, exactly. Like what we, you know, we were touching on in terms of like. If you have that belief in yourself and your own confidence, then you're like, I may not be like an expert, but you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go do it.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, as I emphasize, not an engineer. You know, we can look things up in books and codes and try to
watch
like,
a video on set it up.
Yeah. YouTube yeah. Academy, man. The thing is, that is what's up, man.
I got my PhD. When you were in school and you know, because I did want to like circle back to this a little bit. When you were in school and you know, you were learning all the technical aspects of this work, did you ever feel like, damn, this is hard? Or like, did you struggle? Or like,
I noticed one thing that was really hard to struggle is actually waking up and getting there, because sometimes you just didn't want to
struggle,
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing. Like, just taking care of yourself, you know, like, I noticed one of the things I did not like was the false sense of bravado that I would get from other people who, like, it was just high school all over again. You know, it's like, oh, you know.
Politics,
yeah, it was
space.
Really weird, you know. And I remember in trade school, I purposely bought a pink hard hat, and I would rock the pink hard hat. And I would, like, lock myself up in the booth and just weld and run beads. And I got really good at it. Like, and then the teacher and everybody was, like, kind of, like, it was kind of a joke, or like, oh, who's, you know, the pink helmet. But the teacher would be like, this guy, he's rocking the pink helmet, but he knows how to weld. He spends all his time in the booth welding. So
he's putting
like,
in work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was like one of those things, just like, you know what? I'm going to challenge this whole thing and just put on this stupid hat. And I mean, it was the cheapest hat too, you know? Nobody wanted to buy the pink hat. Just one of the things, the most difficult things about working in this kind of industry was just kind of like, yeah, that sense of like people kind of being a little rough. And I don't know. I don't want to fucking whine about it, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Like I mean, it's a reason why, right? It's mostly hetero men like doing this kind of work, and anybody else trying to get into it is given a hard time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen. When there is one woman there, and then other people being like, why does she think she's in charge and this and that? I was like, geez, there's only one of them. No wonder they're basically acting like us when they're trying to be all like they're, you know, putting up a big old front. I was like, fool, that's how we tend to act, bro. Like, just chill, you know? Like, it was interesting, you know? Like, yeah, that was probably like working in different shops. I mean, you mentioned about like how if my parents were like, oh, we want you to be a better, like to get a better job. I remember working in the shop and being in the back, and there was a bunch of raza. There was Salvadorian, Guatemalan, Mexicans, and they all fucking did not get along, dude, in the shop. We had a big old shop.
That's a lot of politics.
No se llevaban. And I remember one of them being like, Steve, what are you doing back here? You were born here. How come you're working in the shop with us? How come you're not in the office?
How come you're doing manual labor?
Yeah, yeah. Like, my friends call it manual labor. And I was like, because this is what I like to do. I like to, like, I mean, I lock in, I zone out, and I'm just building, throwing some music, and I'm just, like, happiest. And people leave me alone, give me a direction, don't interrupt me, don't micromanage me, and I'll be great, you know? But, yeah, it was just interesting, like, seeing that. I was like, okay. Maybe I should have worked in the office, but I would have been bored.
You know, that speaks to the differences in terms of, like, how we show up to these kind of spaces, right? You're over here like, yo, this is good for me because it helps me do these things and it makes me feel good and I can accomplish them.
It's very soothing.
You're also tapping into your creativity.
I look back at it. I haven't had a therapist. And I was like, wow, if I didn't have this space, I think I'd probably go crazy because I like... Even building the S, I was like, it was the holidays, and I was like, kind of like, oh, man, everyone's doing something for their family. And I was like, I came in, bought some material, and, like, did not leave until I got, like, a good portion of that thing done. And I'll tend to do that sometimes. I'm just like, okay, like, what do I do? Like, I'm going to build this thing and not going to leave until it's done.
Hyper-focus.
Yeah. And it's...
So, like, run it back a little bit and explain to folks what you built.
Oh, do you guys remember? Okay, so back in school, you know, you had that one person who's like, hey, let me show you how to draw this S.
Yeah.
And you know, the three little lines, and then you would connect them on the top and then diagonally two in the bottom. And so I basically built this thing, like, at a 4x8 piece of sheet metal, and now it's on a pin. It spins. It's rusted.
Huge.
Yeah, it's big. I haven't weighed it yet. I think it probably weighs about the same weight as I do,
or
like 280, maybe 350, something like that.
That's not easy to move around.
I have to drag it around.
Like, put some wheels underneath.
I know, right? But I like keeping it so it looks like it's hovering on its own is the illusion. So it was really fun to make that thing, and I was like, wow, you know, it's like. You know, I don't know. I don't even. It's just so silly. You know, it's like, wow.
It's super proportional. Like, it's dude. Like the lines are so fucking straight.
You look closely; they're a little rippled, and like
that's because you're looking closely.
Yeah, that's another problem. When you're spending so much time staring at it, you tend to be like, oh my god, and then people don't notice that stuff.
Dude, when I'm looking at it, that's not what I'm looking at in Instagram. I'm like, this is fucking cool. Like, hell yeah, I want to go like pop this up. Because, you know, like you said, you want to like bring this to events, do pop-ups.
I do. I want to take it down to Venice Beach. I want to encourage more people to draw more S's on it. I would hate to fucking have to tell someone like, hey, dude, don't write your name on it, you know? I would be like, I don't go side-busting your shit, you know? Like, get out of here. Because I know someone's going to do that. I know
all you got to do is just leave it out there.
No.
It weighs so much. I don't think anybody's going to be able to like fucking try to steal
it. Someone will take it, dude. Someone will take that thing. Believe me. If I saw it, and I was like, oh, I want that in my house.
I'm not going to lie. I'm like that.
Yeah, public art, man. Like, when you do gorilla stuff like that, it's going to go and it's going to get disappeared real quick. Like, my friends over here from, Bohemian Incorporated did the Three Stooges on the freeway.
Oh, no way.
They did that. They spent so much time on building that, and they glued it on the side of the freeway right there on the 110 going into downtown, and it just stayed 7 days. I bet you anything that thing is sitting in some city's workers' like garage, like, you know. Yeah.
If I knew how to like fucking take shit down from walls, I would.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
because I'm like, I see shit like Space Invader. I was like, fuck, I would love that,
dude.
But that fool glues that shit on, like, on there.
He puts it on there really, really nice. I mean, I've been thinking about like because of riding to Vegas, that was another thing. I was like, went around, found some public art, and I got really, I was like, you know what? I want to do a bike ride called Public Arts, Public Works. And then we ride around, try to find like either public art that's been like sanctioned or unsanctioned. And then in between a couple, like maybe once a month, I'll build something. I have a cordless rotor hammer and just kind of anchor it into some places and just kind of start putting stuff up. And trying to invite people to just kind of hang out and do little bike rides.
Hell yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
I mean, that's all you need, man.
Yeah. So it's more ideas that it's just like, I probably should chill on the ideas. I keep making a big list for myself.
Dude, I think we're on the same page in terms of like, there's so many things I want to do and make this happen. And I know most of the time the drive behind them is like a personal thing of like, I just think it's going to be funny or I want to see that. And
it's all for the laughs.
It's all for the LOLs. And then I'm like, well, actually, this is going to cost me some money. So I don't know. This joke is going to be kind of expensive.
And they're like, you're the only one laughing?
Yeah.
It's like, it's worth it. It's totally worth it. Nobody got the joke except for me.
I got it.
Yeah.
The real ones, though. If you know, you know.
That's too funny, man. It's a waste of time. I mean, like, I figured out, like, I waste money on other bullshit. I might as well just do something like this.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, fuck. That one less bag of hot Cheetos that I got to buy. Shit. But, dude, that is awesome, man. Yeah. In terms of, like, you know, working with the S and stuff like that, you were just showing me right now, you're, like, working on furniture made out of, like, bicycle frames.
Yeah. So a lot of these things, they're so tedious because the material is so thin and you're trying to re-weld it.
It's not built for that.
So you're just, like, that's why upcycling, you're like, wow, you know, it's material that it should be more cheaper and you sell it. I was like, no, man, it's all the time and stuff like that. And that's why a couple, like, I, three of those chairs in there haven't even been finished yet because it's like I put them away and I come back to them. I put them away and come back to them. And then like we did something with my friend Eddie from the Bike Kitchen. He moved back to Boston and we just built like eight. We built three chairs in 8 hours between three people here.
Damn.
And two of them didn't know anything about welding. So I had to like, you know, like be right behind
everyone.
Eddie knew a bit. And he was the one that formed these, you know. It was really cool. When I, like, normally I'm like, all right, how are we going to approach this? And it was really nice to see him just kind of work and like, oh, wow, that's an interesting way to bend and to kind
of
terminate those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I was more surprised that we got three done in 8 hours. That's like about 2.5 hours per piece. And I always kind of look at that because I was like, when I do bids for jobs, I try to figure out things like how long it's going to take me to do something. And like, you know, will I be making money, you know, like in the end of it.
I mean, you know, it is like how you keep your space up and running.
Yeah.
How you keep your projects going and shit like that. It's totally a big part. Probably fucking pay your rent and shit.
Oh, yeah. Surprise, right? Like you do something that actually pays your rent.
And yeah. No, I mean, and, you know, I think you're really good about those, like, the S projects where you're like, this is just shit's out there, and if you know, you know. And then you do more practical shit. Like, I got a panel bench from you that I fucking love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the Hypercube. Yeah, there was a Hypercube style. It was a piano bench. That one, I remember I had an old piano in here, and I finally decided to get rid of it, and I gutted it. And I saved the soundboard where the keys lived at. And I cut them up, and I just start, you know, I was like, at that point, I was like, oh, I'm going to make something that people, I can. It's easy for me to make. And, like, it's kind of like, so I used the hairpin legs, and I crossed them out. Like added some more material and just made them real small and simple. And that's when I started noticing. I was like, oh, I'm gonna make commercial stuff. I didn't really want to. I don't like making like stuff like that. But it's like I have a bunch of them at home still. I either have to get a crew of people to help promote and sell this stuff.
You need a street team.
Yeah, I know, I do.
You just got to have, like, a bunch of videos of people sitting on them.
I know, right? like, just over and over again. It's like some kind of, no sound.
Well, fucking
like,
mix it up, dude. Do the SMR. Do it where, like, somebody sits on the bench and there's a fucking whoopee cushion out there.
They're like, piano bench, you know? With the fucking voice like that.
Yeah,
it's like,
dude.
Get yours now. Yeah, oh, man, I've had so many crazy ideas. My friend, she's a graphic design artist. I told her, hey, can you help me make some flyers that look like flyers for like Trader Joe's and like Super A, and instead of like
Super
produce
style.
Instead of produce is like my furniture, like advertised like $3.99 la libra for,
yeah,
like,
you know, that's some crazy Gideon shit, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, dude. Oh, crazy Gideon. That place is now what, like,
it's fucking empty.
It's an empty parking lot. I think it's downtown brewery.
Yeah, the Korean church at the Olympic Auditorium.
Yeah, I used to love those guys' commercials. He was cool. Guy.
He did a. It's funny enough. He did a video for social media for the Arts District Brewery because they did like the crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's where it's at now. Arts District Brewery.
Yeah. So fuck, damn, dude. But yeah, dude. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that I love my bench.
Thank you. I'm glad you.
Because I help like get the word out. Like my homie ended up buying a table from you too.
Oh yeah, that was Mariana.
Yeah.
Yeah, she bought that Mondrian inspired kind of like primary color one, and that was really cool. Like a lot of the stuff. By making it, I'll learn more about the artists that I'm like referencing, you know. And it was really cool to like just make these. I remember I made like sometimes I made like five of those in one go, and I was just spray painting like crazy in here and like mass taping them,
fucking hogging it up in here.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun. That was a really cool chair. I'm glad she bought that for me. And
man. Dude, when you're working on projects like that you know your goal is ultimately like, you know, to try to make some profit off them. Do you struggle with like setting prices for your work like that?
You know what? I do, because I see things that are out there already, like, you know, Modernica, they have a big old shop and get everything made in like out of, I think for the most part, some of them are made here, the fiberglass molds, and like other companies that make stuff, you know, like the Rad Furnitures and Atwater.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff is just like, they have a crew and they're just pumping it out, and they're like able to move them faster because of the marketing. So I remember having a piece that I put in at the Hunt vintage store in Echo Park, my friend Michael, and he was always telling me, he's like, Steve, like, I had a piece of furniture that sat here for, like, 2 years. And it's moving stuff is not easy. Like, I finally sold one piece that's, like, that Mondrian kind of pastel color, the primary color thing. It sat in this place for almost a year.
Dang.
And I was always like, oh, let's drop the price. And he was like, no, you just have to let it sit. You know, you just have to let it sit.
And that's a very long time to
wait. It sat, and it sold it for $350. And I was like, cool, you know, it's so funny. I made other stuff like pot racks out of bicycle parts and have sold those for like $2,000 because they have to get re-chromed and stuff like that. So it's just like all varies, you know, like people don't know it exists until they find it, right?
Yeah. Like, I think for me, my like personal thing is just like, I see what you're doing. I see the intention. I see the art. I see it as a one of one, right? Of like, damn, this fool really just thought this up and made it. And I appreciate that more than ever. As I get older and like really become like, you know, like very not picky, but very intentional about how I have my home and what I decorate it with and stuff like that. And so because of that, because I think about all that, I was like, fuck, man, the last thing I want to do is ask you, hey, man, can you go down on the price and try to haggle with you?
You know,
because like, that's your art. That's your work.
Yeah. I mean, if it, like for me, when it's someone who's like, oh, you know, they want me to build something for them, and I'm like, come on, man. It's like, if I'm going to make something from the beginning, if it's already made, I can just like, you know what, I want to get it out of my apartment. Like, sometimes all the stuff in my apartment starts disappearing slowly, and I'm like, cool, I got to make some more stuff. Like, but like stuff like that, I was like, if it's already made and sitting there, like, I would say don't hesitate to like, hey, man, you know, like, how much can you give me on this thing?
Like, go to your house and be like, hey, how much for that?
You know, I made a bunch of those piano benches, the stools, the one you have, and the piano benches. And right now they're at LA Moss in Cypress Park. I talked to Miguel and I was like, hey, man, can I like store these here and like you guys use them? He's like, cool, you know. So now there's like 10 of those motherfuckers.
Hell yeah.
Over there. And I was like, and I need to try and make an effort to try to get them sold. I need to try to come up with like some kind of way. I think that's gonna be the thing. I'll be like, god damn, this shit worked, dude. I can't believe it. That's good.
You know, you, with all the stuff that you're doing, a while back you were sharing on your Instagram something very personal that I was like, oh, like, I didn't know you were part of that, which was a community space back in the early 2000s, I believe, from 2001 to around 2005 or 6.
Yeah, Floricanto.
Floricanto space, yeah. A Figueroa. Like, let folks know a little bit about what that space was.
So, yeah, Floricanto was a community center, and they had, like, book readings and, like, had a couch, a foosball table. It had a Linux system. They were, like, teaching people how to, I remember Esteban was trying to teach me how to get...
We don't use his real name.
No, we don't use his name. You know? We're like, what? He's a great guy, man. Dude, they left a lasting impression on me because that space, this whole time, I didn't even know it was an anarchist fucking driven place, you know? And this whole place, we were just kids hanging out, but never once did they try to, like, convert us.
Hey, kid, you want to be an anarchist?
Yeah, it was just like, they were more, like, cool. People were using the space.
Yeah.
And, like, all these books, I never even looked at them, but they're just all kind of like the more of like radical side in books. And so Floricanto was a space like was right around the corner from where I grew up on Avenue 37. And I remember just going there for the foosball.
How did you first like learn about it? Like, you just one day walked by and saw it and be like, let me check this out?
We would go to the liquor store that was down the street because we would go buy stuff. And then we'd pass by and like, what is this space, you know? And and slowly started kind of just peeping my head in there and just checking it out. And then slowly just, like, it just absorbed me.
This is like a stray cat. What's going on in here?
Exactly, dude. All this, me and my brother, we kind of got adopted by Floricanto and my other friend. And, it was really cool because, like, I remember the day that Anita and Esteban gave me keys. And I was shocked. I was, like, probably like 17 years old. And I was like, why are you guys giving me keys? He's like, because you're our friend.
Ah, they trust
and,
you.
And it felt like, as a young kid, I was so like inundated with like, wow, no one ever gave me this responsibility. So I remember having to open up, and like my friends knew I was in charge. They were like, oh, we would sell snacks, and they would just always just try to get the snacks for free. And I'll be like, hey, just don't do that. Like, you gotta pay for that. They're like, whatever, Steve. And I was like, fuck, I hate you guys. They're like, fucking neighbor, like fucking silver tooth kids, bro. I couldn't deal with it.
And they come like, back to the space and be like, what happened to the snacks,
Steve? I know. They're like, they're going to look at me, little fatty.
You got a mom. We came in here and took all of them.
I know. And me and my brother used to be there. It was so cool. Yeah, like they would have, I remember one time this van pulled up and they were playing music out of the van, And I, they were playing, and I, this whole time I thought they were fucking getting ready to play, but that was their set. It sounded like noise. It's like,
Experimental stuff.
So Floricanto was really cool. It was really interesting to learn about like spaces like that at a young age, and like first of all and foremost, being a, like invited in and being a part of it. And you know, after that, it turned into Sandpaper Books, and then after that, I was like working, volunteering, and hanging out more of like a hanging out at the old space where the bike oven used to be on Avenue 42 in our friend's garage. And then it moved over there, you know, to where Floricanto was at. And yeah, I mean, it was just so interesting that these third spaces, how much like just a garage with tools where you get invited in to come hang out and tinker. It was like, wow, this is
same,
cool.
Same as Floricanto, right? Yeah. This is the community space. There's no pressure. There's no commitment or obligation to, like, you got to do something productive. Or, you know, the capitalist thing of, like, buy something or fucking get out. They say,
yeah. I remember, the liquor store, doing you, ding, dong, yeah, when you walk in.
Yeah, man. It's like,
just a reminder of, like, hey, like, you better buy something.
I used to go to the fucking Save-On back in the day, and just go in there and read the fucking magazines.
Oh, wow, that's funny. Until they kick you out, they're like, I'm not paying for this. Wow. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Part of why I asked about Floricanto, aside from like wanting to hear what that meant to you, because when you shared it on your Instagram, it was like, wow, this really had a big impact on you, and I wanted to ask you about it. But
yeah,
it turns out we have something in common with that space.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you know, after the Floricanto closed down, Anita and Esteban started a blog online.
Okay, I heard about this.
And I was a part of it.
Oh my God, okay. You guys were trying to figure out where the line got divided.
Figure out fucking nothing. It's the hipsters that need to figure that shit out.
I heard about that. You're like, what? They're like, no, that's East LA. No, that's Northeast LA.
Yeah, dude. So not to fucking be out here and being like,
no, like, yeah, North, like, yeah, everybody's still like, this is Nella. I was like, what? This is West, East LA. Yeah,
like, it's fucking, well, more than anything, it was an online discussion back in the early 2000s of letting the fucking early transplants and hipsters know, yo, fucking Echo Park and Silver Lake and all that shit ain't the East Side, bro.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
There's fucking lines in the river, literally, literally split by a river. Like, yeah. And that's why I call it East LA.
Yeah, we've already been divided. Don't try to divide us anymore.
The funny thing about that shit is that it comes up every couple of years in the news, and especially in the LA Times.
Really?
I
guess it's one of the things
they'll bring that shit up in terms of like, oh, like people call it this, but actually the real people call it that.
That's so funny.
Yeah, dude. It's like the first time that like blew up online, it turned into like a whole thing that even the LA Times wrote about it. And, whoa. Like, quoting people.
They
at one point, like the Echo Park neighborhood or one of the neighborhood councils from that area that was trying to claim the East Side made a proclamation at their neighborhood council. This is not the East Side.
Then it turned into be like the Dave Chappelle. We're like, we'll take, the East Side for the taco stand. You're like, okay, deal.
Yeah, you know? Dude. But I was like, that's why I was waiting to like tell you that, like, oh, yo, like the same way they like opened up that space,
uh-huh,
and kind of like mentored folks and just really gave them like an opportunity to do their own thing, is they did the same thing for me with that digital space. Like, I, at that time, I was being a fucking pendejo, and I said a lot of stupid things with very like obvious grammatical errors and shit like that, because I used to write from like a stream of consciousness for my mind and never fucking use spell check. But just them holding down that space and paying for like the website renewal,
yeah,
and all that,
dude,
shit.
Like,
That shit put me, like, on another level, like, similar to you, where, like, wow, like, these folks are awesome. They're not asking anything of me. They're super cool. They're super supportive. They're super down. And I'm like, that left a big impact on me. So shout out to them, you know, Anita and Esteban, you know.
I really appreciate what they've done. And, like, it's just, like.
Also, I should say sorry for using your real name.
I was like, I know. And I was like, oh, I hope I didn't. Me too. But these are people I know, man. And the people I grew up with. So I was like, you know, I love them all, man. I was like, they all left a really good impression on me. And it was a lot of fun. You know, that's why it was so important to me to, like, when I saw the place kind of run into shambles, I was like, okay, I got to get this back going. I got to get this place going again, like the space. But, you know, it's very difficult to take roles like that when you have no experience.
Learning as you go.
I approached it as, like, I'm a contractor, and we need to just get this thing going again. And I approached it as, like, in the format of, like, a blue collar of way of organizing, which is, like, look, I have electricians, I have plumbers, I have people with skill sets. Do you want to help? And then, like, when it came a little to more about, like, forming things, I was like, okay, it's more frustrating to me, you know. It's just, like, actual, like, sitting down and being able to, like, agree and disagree. And it's like,
yeah,
I remember being, like, being able to make decisions rather quickly. And I was like, cool, this is great. We're getting things done. And now it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't know about this collective thing anymore.
That's a big difference, right, between, like, the binary and, like, the more democratic, like, side of things. Because you work in a very binary kind of space of, like, I need to cut it this way to these exact measurements.
That's another
right?
thing, too. Is everyone's getting paid, so then everyone's going to try to meet at that point. But when everyone's not getting paid and there's, like, people, and they're like, there's one thing that somebody told me before. He's like, see, if you're going to learn something out of this whole experience, you'll notice that 20% out of the group are going to be the ones who actually put in a lot more work, and then the rest are kind of just sit there and on the sidelines, kind of sort of say, and, like, critique or give advice.
Give ideas.
Yeah.
Give direction.
Like, yeah, I'm just like, I was like, because I've always been around, like, all right, I'm working with a painter, I'm working with this, and, like,
people who are like, I know what I'm doing, and I know how to do it.
Exactly, and I'll have it done, and then you can pass it on to you. But then when, like, I guess that's one of the things about, you know, collective, you know, getting together, it's like, working together, and people say it's like we don't do enough of that, and maybe we should be as a community working together to do that. But then it's just so much easier, like, when you look at it, how much effort is, like, another family.
It's
another family. You already have your own family with all its quirks and stuff like that. And if you're like me, you grew up with a family, but it was not like a family. Like, people were, like, they were tight, you know, people were cool, but it was just always just like, fuck, dude. I was like, I can't wait to move out of here.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. Emotional labor.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've noticed too, is, like, always, like, when I make jokes and someone from another broken home hears my joke and they're like, oh, that's funny. And I was like, oh, you get me.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, from being at Floricanto and from that place, like, closing down, like you mentioned, the bike oven eventually took over that space. But how did you end up first, like, getting involved with the bike oven? Because you said you would go to the garage.
Yeah.
And so then you went over to the space.
So the garage was put together with my friend, and he would just open it up and, like, again, I would hang out. And then he finally was like, hey, you want keys? And again, I was like, well, I've noticed something about it. Responsibility. Do not make yourself the position where people want to give you responsibility.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I feel that.
And I've learned that a lot.
As I've learned in these last couple of years from younger homies, weaponized incompetence.
I've heard about that. Yes. And I was like at 2 o'clock in the morning scrolling when a TikTok, like a Instagram video popped up. I was like, what? Let me look this up. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I should, you know. It
names to our behavior.
Yes. And that's one thing I've noticed about, like, certain crews. When you work on things and there's lack of direction, do not make yourself the jefe. You know, you know, even though it's instinctually, like, one of those things as growing up as, like, a Hispanic boy, one of your dreams is to be every Hispanic boy's dream is to be jefe one day. So that's what I say. And I'm like,
I mean, that was my parents' dream for me, to be a boss of some kind and shit.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, it's like, the, you know, the jefe fucking drives the truck, jefe gets things done.
They got the big truck, they got the big shoes, they got
the, I don't know, the like, fucking clown shoes.
Voluptuous girlfriend and shit. Oh, like that. Shit. Everything's big.
I know, right? This is more of like a consumer kind
everything's
of
big. My house is big, my car is big.
But my heart. And
my dick is small.
He's like, wait, I don't know about that anymore.
Compensating for shit.
Oh my god, no! I mean, yeah, that whole vibe about like the heaven thing is just so funny because it's just like taking direction and leadership and not knowing what the fuck you're doing, and then it was like, I'm just gonna get this done.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. I don't like that one too. But
so before I get a little more ahead of myself, can you kind of share with folks what is the Bike Oven? What is it?
So the Bike Oven is a community space. I remember when I wrote it down, it was like, an industrious space where people come to learn how to work on bikes and teach other people how to work on bikes.
Co-op.
Yeah. And I remember writing that thing down with my best of my grammar and be like, industrious. Yeah.
That's a good word.
I want people to come here and be like self-starters and like kind of just focus on the mechanics of the space and the mechanics of like riding bikes and having fun. Like, it got a little weird when everybody wanted to fucking get political, and I was just like, oh god, here we go again. Like, we get it. It's like everybody wants their own vanity project
thing. A lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that was a moment like, but I remember just because I came from a mechanical like background and always wanted to just tinker and stuff like that, I was like, if we just focus on this one thing and one thing only, the place will be great. But like the space is been there for a bit of a while, and they just offer stand time and parts, and people come and work on their bikes. People come and meet other people. It's that's where I met like most of my friends. You know, that's one of the reasons
it's
why
a community space.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons why I wanted to get the space back, because I was looking at photos. And I was like, wow, I was having a lot of fun in this time.
It was a lot of fun, man. Oh, pre-pandemic fun.
It was so many people.
Good all times, these just riding your bikes with the homies. People were getting into like trouble, like being messy and shit.
Yeah. A lot of drinking and like dangerous. It's dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, but we're all adults, you know. We should be looking out for ourselves and shit.
True.
But yeah, so to give folks a little bit more context, if you're not in the bike community, the Oven is part of a bunch of other there's no collective or anything. I'm just saying they're part of, because there's a bunch of other co-ops in the city with the same and very similar mission of like, it's a community space with the sole intention of like giving folks the ability to come in to learn how to fix their bikes, to give them the opportunity to fix their bikes with materials, you know, and donation based, you know, to pay for the materials, the stand time, to help keep the space running. And so far, there's the Oven. There's the Bike Kitchen. Mm-hmm. There's the Microwave. To some extent, there's Bici Libre, too.
Bici Libre.
Are there any more co-ops?
I think there might be one in the Valley, but it might not. It might just be not operating. I forgot. The Valley.
They're taking a hiatus.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think at one point there used to be more.
Yeah, there used to be quite
for sure,
a bit more.
But it's hard to maintain a space when you're like, not
it's all volunteer.
When you're volunteer run and not for profit, not a non-profit, not for profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing where it's just like, you're like, wait a minute. It's exhausting.
So with the Oven, like you said, you know, like things were up and running, the space was there, a community space was, because I remember going to the spoken art ride and like going for different events, but I'm missing a piece of like history of like remembering all those good times, and then all of a sudden, because I saw a video you posted on Instagram of like, you opened the door with your key,
and
it was like a hoarder or like somebody were just like
stuffing it was pretty
their
bad.
Stuff in there.
It was pretty bad. I remember during that time, I was juggling another job at the same time, and that was really tough because I was getting yelled at like, dude, we need you here. Like, why the fuck do you care about
the Oven?
Yeah. No. They need me at the other job.
Oh, like, you're getting paid for this. You need to be here.
Yeah. And I was still, I put aside so much, and I was like nearly risking a lot of my own potential like work just to kind of bounce back and forth. So I remember getting the keys from a friend and like opening it up and being like, oh shit, this is gonna be harder than I thought, you know?
But what ended up happening? Was somebody living there? Like, was the place just not maintained?
It wasn't maintained, and it was like, you know, it was a dear friend of ours who was kind of like having a hard time with their kind of like mental health. And it turned into like just like a big pile of stuff.
Yeah,
and then you had to climb in there. There was.
I saw it. Like you could barely fucking walk in there.
Barely go in there, and then just like it turned. You know, like I think we took like three large like yard trash containers out of that thing, and we just like tossed everything away. But yeah, for the most part, it was really tough, man. Because I was like, I opened up. I was like, oh man. I ran down to Home Depot. I got some workers. I go, hey, get in there, trabajar. I told them like, whatever you guys do, do not listen to anybody else. Just keep moving, and I'll be back. I left. That was the first time I was like, I did something like that. I was like managing a project, and like I left and came back, and just like, you know. And then a lot of people started showing up, like a lot of people who remember the space, you know, they're like starting showing up and they were starting to help. And I was like, cool. Like, this is exactly the motivation.
I will say, dude, that was really beautiful to see the content you posted up of like pictures and video of that transition. Because it's chronological. I saw the video of like you open the door and it's like from head to toe, like covered up and stuff. And then I see more and more pictures of like people coming in. And like the progress of like pulling everything out, rebuilding things, folks doing the wiring, electricity, and then like seeing the space come back to life when y'all had hosted that first art show.
Yeah, that was like the culmination of that whole thing. I was like, finally, we're like, you could take a deep breath.
Yeah,
it was really cool. I mean, like for me, I enjoyed both of it, the chaotic side of everything, and then like actual the tranquil part of it. I was like, all right, great, and it was just, you know, really nice. Like I keep looking back at it, I was like, all right, you know, the work is done, it's like it's back, and you know, it's like now it's just like hopefully like you can like it's still going and it's going strong from what I hear.
2.0.
From what I'm hearing, like everyone's doing really good work, and it's like a lot of new people and a lot of new faces, which I think is important. Like, you know, how easily I was able to give keys to people real quickly and just being like, fuck it, you look cool, I mean, here you go. Like, just the same way that Joseph gave me keys, Anita gave me keys, just, like, trusting people. And I'm like, and, and then, like, you know, now they're just, like, they're setting up and they're trying to bring in more people into the space. So that's cool. Doing more stuff.
I mean, for sure, you know, I support where I can, share the events. When y'all would, like, do mechanic support at like Ciclovia in advance, I was like, y'all are selling bandanas. I got two bandanas.
Oh,
those
dude,
are two
the
of my
bandana
favorite bandanas.
Things were such a great idea. I remember Eric Miller, he made that for us, and I was like, wow, we need to encourage more artists to make more swag.
Yeah.
And then we just print it and just kind of
like, I don't know, like let's say you got enough money to do 300 shirts, boom, that's one run of like run and done.
Yeah.
Like, you get a shirt, you get a shirt. If you don't, you don't. That design is not coming
back.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think that was the cool part. I remember, I was like, that was a thing to include other people who weren't good at mechanics but still want to be a part of
it. Yeah.
Like, hey, man, you want to design something for us?
And I mean, imagine, like, some young person comes in and be like, I don't know how to do any of this, but I know how to make TikToks.
Yeah, exactly. And but then, like, at the same time, everyone has to be on the same page, you know?
Yeah, you're like, yeah. Hey, man, you can't be saying that on TikTok.
Yeah, they're like, hey, political fool, hey, political. It's like, what? No. You know? It was really great. Like, I remember the person who goes in contact with that was the Bicycle Kitchen. They were a big help in helping kind of get that going.
Yeah.
And then, like, Gabriel, Peter,
they've been
Eddie.
Around, I think, just as long, if not longer.
Yeah, they've been around for a while, and then I was just like copy and paste, like let's just use their format and just do the same thing, bylaws, everything. You know, it was just a little bit more difficult to kind of like set those in place and move them forward, like having to sit down and have meetings and then discuss and be like, I just thought if
somebody taking notes.
yeah, I just thought that since we were copying and pasting, they were just going to continue doing the same thing as like something that's already been proven to work, you know, but I guess, you know, still people want to put their own style on things.
Yeah,
so that's
maybe improve on them, switch things up. That's part of the process of, like, collective work.
Yeah.
Which can be, like, emotionally draining.
Oh, God. Tell me about I was like, I've checked out. Yeah, no, that the Ciclovia workshops, and then I think a big help was, I remember around the cycle in Pasadena, Ryan and my friend Olson, who put us in touch, he used to work there, got us like a bunch of donations from them. And,
hell
like,
yeah.
And then like, there were some other people, can't remember their name right now, like they just like, they were just really helpful and all that. And yeah, it was like one of those things I was like, man, I didn't even know this other side of the skill. Maybe I should do like outreach. And I was like, it's, I think I'm probably more happier. I'm a little bit more like where I'm like, I could make stuff and like help out from
afar.
Yeah,
stuff
like
you know
that.
Your lane.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, man. I was like, that place is great. Bike Kitchen, Bikerwave. I think the Bikerwave, the way they registered, I think it's for profit, not for profit.
Made the transition.
Yeah, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it makes like longevity a little bit more possible.
Yeah, it helps because then it's like helps sustain the place a little bit more.
You switch categories, you have access to different resources. A regular nonprofit status means you like applying for grants and getting donations and shit like that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the place is still there and going strong. I always got that thinking, I was like, you know what? Maybe just go somewhere and help people start another place and then just
and
like
then
dip
bounce.
Out. Yeah.
That's not a bad idea, man.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that part of it. It's like getting in, like, you know, being able to just like, all right, like, let's fix this, let's fix that. And then just like try to get people who are good at those things and then just like, okay, your skill set's here and then here. Like, can we, you know, can we like just and dip out and hopefully it kind of takes off on its own
way.
Because there's a lot of storefronts out that are very cheap and, you know, like even just starting out of a garage.
Yeah.
You know, paying $300 and just telling everybody like, hey, you meet up here and then we just work on bikes and stuff like that.
Just come make it happen. That specifically reminds me of the Bike Sanos out of Pacoima, because that's how it was a group of folks that live as a collective in a home, and part of the work they did, aside from like a bunch of other stuff, they used their garage for that. Like, they just let folks from the community let them know, hey, like, we're out here, like, we can fix your bike or we can help you fix your bike.
Oh, that's
and
so
stuff
dope.
Like that. Yeah, I don't know what capacity they're around anymore, but I was able to connect it with them back in the 2011, 2012, and so I was like, man, this is so dope. Like, y'all are just living here, doing your thing, you're doing all these amazing things, and you're just helping the community.
Yeah, those spaces are very important.
It's very organic too. But with everything that you did, when did you realize, all right, it's time for me to like peace out, like let this thing do its own thing?
I remember being like 3 months in, like I remember looking at my journal, my ship log journal, and just being like, okay, I gave myself, you know, the thing is like, I was like, you know, I felt like I expired real quickly, you know, cause I spoil real fast sometimes. Mm. And I've noticed just like, okay, 3 months in. 3 months turn into, and like the people that I thought were going to kind of come in and kind of take charge of the space didn't. And then it was just sitting there. And then I, you know, like it took a while. Like I remember after like almost a year, I was done. And I think the resentment grew more and more. And that's one of the things I just need to be careful. If anyone out there, if you don't let resentment grow, guys.
Hey.
Don't. I mean, like, truth, if you have, just listen to yourself. And if you have a feeling that's like of you don't want to do this, fucking dip out, bro.
Yeah.
Because the longer you stay, the more resentment.
I think, yeah, like, I appreciate you saying that, man, because I've had experience with that. And I definitely agree that if you let it just keep growing, it's going to keep getting worse. And it's going to seem that much more harder to, like, be able to fix it. And then sometimes it's one way or another, things are going to come to an end, whether that's, like, you know, like a smooth transition that's, like, healthy, or you just burn down a whole fucking house.
That's funny. Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, fuck it. That's too far gone. I can't save it.
You're like that Elmo fucking meme with the
fire. Yeah, man, this is not fun.
This is not fun. No. Man, I remember. Yeah, and I think I just, like, eventually I was like, I remember being like, fuck. Like, I really wanted a collective to be part of, to take over the space, a group of people. And I remember even saying one time, there needs to be rules and something to protect the space to protect itself from characters, even such as myself, you know?
Like, do not accept checks from this man.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like very boisterous and just annoying sometimes and just like, shut up.
It was dude, like, I mean, like when you, for anybody that's been around any organizing spaces, like y'all are like, yep, I know those people.
Yeah, you yeah. know? And I was like, the longer I stayed there, the longer I kept thinking about like how the place always had like, it had its heyday and it went to shit. And it went again and it went to shit. And like, I just remember being very strict and being like, no drinking, no smoking. Mm. And people were like, you're not our boss. This is, you know, we come and volunteer here. I was like, but I've been
you're
here.
You're not and my dad.
Yeah, you're not my dad. I was like,
I thought this place was cool. What do you mean I can't do my drugs here? Get fucking drunk.
And it's such a common thing to smoke weed on the daily. I'm like, bro, can't you wait till you get home and fucking smoke weed? You're like, you have to smoke weed in the middle of the fucking day?
Fucking pound a brew también. Oh, yeah. I was like, man, it's funny you mentioned that, dude, because some folks know and some don't. I am a bike person. I love to ride my bike. I'm involved in that kind of spaces in so many different capacities. And as of late, I've been working with Olin from Esquina, who's a previous podcast guest, to put on the Critical Masa rides. It's a straight-up community ride where we just get together at his bike shop, and then we go ride to somewhere to eat and then come back. And from the fucking, just from doing that, fuck, I kind of lost my.
They were like, they're thinking about food now. I'm hungry now. So I was like, let's go ride. I only have one bike here, but
the fucking cult of personalities and shit. What the fuck fucking point I was trying to say? What were you saying?
We were talking about tacos.
Oh, people getting high and shit like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So from this bike ride. We've never said like this is a sober ride, you know, this and that. We try to keep it family friendly and community friendly, right? And we, same as you, we try to balance like expectations and safety and responsibility because we just want folks to have fun and to be safe and to get home. Yeah. The last thing we want for is for somebody to get hurt or have a really bad experience. They're like, y'all are fucking assholes or whatever, but. As we do this ride, and more folks ask me about it and see what I'm doing, and they're like, you know, they start kind of like sharing that like this is important because they are in other bike spaces or in other community spaces, and they're telling me like all folks want to do is just fucking pound beers and smoke weed, and like, bro, can we just go ride our bikes and have fun instead of like just fucking get drunk and shit and get fucked up? And I'm like, is it really that bad that folks are just like, every ride you go to, everybody's just fucking pounding and shit?
I guess it's definitely cheaper going to the bar.
Yeah, that's, you know, for sure.
And it's like paper bagging and chilling is like one of the things. I guess it's just the culture, you know? And I've been reading somewhere like that this generation, the new generation, doesn't drink as much as the old generation.
That's what I see.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know.
But people love those buzz balls, man.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, it is tricky. I've been in a bunch of bike rides where people just get hurt.
I've been to Critical Mass and I've seen people get hurt and eat shit because they're drunk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of my good friends, like, he wasn't even drunk. Someone else caused an accident.
That's another thing, too.
And he nearly cut his artery on his leg.
Fuck.
And he, like, it was just freak accident, just build up. And I was like, fuck. I was like, you know, it's just like, you can't even, like, and you got to look out for the wheelie kids, and then now the fixie kids, and now some drunk
food. The BMX fools.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, dude. Like it's hard to balance that because I'm not here to police anybody's behavior, but at some point you do need to be responsible and not put others in danger.
I was just trying to be careful. I'm like, all right, I'm not gonna ride next to this fool.
Dude, it's the same as fucking driving a car. Oh, that fool's on his phone. Let me get the fuck out of this lane. It sucks to say that, and it sucks to kind of realize that, but. I mean, fuck, I guess, you know, I think it's a sign of the times, partially, right?
Yeah, I think everyone's getting older.
And, like, there's a lot of struggle going on, and when you're struggling, you know, you just want to disassociate and just fucking pound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I've seen too many close calls.
Yeah, dude, that shit's fucking scary. But, anyways, you eventually, you said you were, like, into it, like, and you didn't want the resentment to build up. So when was, like, the day you're like, you know what? Today is the day I give my keys back.
No.
I'm peaced out.
I think that it was more of, like, I guess in retrospect, to look at it, it was like, finally, they made a collective decision.
Only took them this long.
Yeah, they made a collective decision to kick me out.
We can agree on that.
I was like, I was mad, but then at the, like, in the,
hey, no
in the
shit back, to anybody. No shit
yeah,
to
no,
anybody.
No shit to anybody. I'm laughing at myself, guys. Come on, look. It's self-deprecating, guys. Ha, 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 ha. Me, I fucked up. But the funny part, I was like, looked at it, I was all pissed. I was like, and I was like, okay, finally, they made a decision. And then that decision was like, you're out of here.
You're off the island. Steve.
I got voted. I got voted off the island. Yeah, man, I was just like, and then like, you know, like after that, kind of giving me time to work on myself, I'd be like, damn, Steve. You do like chaos way too much, bro.
We choose violence sometimes. We choose violence. I'm not going to lie.
I know, right? It's like, it's more familiar. It's more
familiar. I know what I'm getting into. It's comfortable sometimes.
I can navigate this motherfucker. I thrive in this motherfucker. It's so funny, man. Oh, my God. Yeah, so they, you know, like the place finally, you know, decided. But like, from what I'm hearing is like they're working on bylaws and all that stuff. And I just thought it was funny that there's, you know, like, this is trying to figure out how to get more people involved and not, like openly giving out keys. Like, as far as, like, everyone there, like, I remember almost giving everyone keys and just being like, fuck it, here you go. But now they're just kind of trying to bottle that. They're trying to button down on that, which is, it makes sense because, you know, like, you know, it just takes one person to fuck it up for everybody kind of thing.
Things so go missing, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, not even about that. I remember when we used to be, because the old volunteers, you always be worried, oh, the Fixie kids are taking the 15s. And we're like, fuck the 15s, bro, fucking let's buy more and just give them away. Who cares? And I remember people just like worrying about the stuff going missing, but it was all free stuff. Like we're
That's
fighting.
That's a good point.
We're fighting, like everybody's freaking out about free stuff. I was like, wow, you know, it's like when, you know, yeah, I guess that's the nature of like when there's, I guess, a scarcity. I don't know. You know,
it's a lot to unravel there, man. You know, we're not fucking therapists to people or, you know, psychiatrists and shit like that. But from my own experience, yeah, when you grow up with scarcity, with like struggling and not having shit, I don't leave my home without closing my doors and locking them and closing my windows and being like, fuck, I sure don't want anybody to fucking steal my PS5. And I'm like, it's just a fucking thing.
Dude,
like,
I used to be worried that someone would rip off my welding machine and I would be like, fuck it. If they do, I hope they fucking use it to make money. You know, some shit
like
that. I hope
they put it to use.
Yeah, yeah. I do. I remember, like, really funny about scarcity is, like, back in the day when we started with my friend Michael, it was so fun. Like, it was just, like, a collective of me and my friends and the jokes and just like hanging out. Like some guy came in and he wanted something and I was like, hey man, you know, can you give us anything? I don't know. I felt like if we just completely gave people something, they wouldn't appreciate it. If they gave us something for it, you know, like whatever.
Give a man a fish.
Even a dollar, you know. I remember the guy, I forgot his name, he had an interesting name. And he offered us methamphetamines. Because we're like, man, you know, you have a dollar, you have something. He's like, oh, I have this. And me and my friend Michael looked at each other and we're like, fucking crazy, dude. This guy's willing to give us what he values, which is his drugs. And that day we were still organizing. I was like, man, we should have took the meth. We would have fucking got this shit cleaned up, bro. But it was just interesting. Like, I remember just like in like a social experiments, like even Amsterdam, they had free bikes. And everybody just trashed the free bikes. But, you know, they would just leave them out. Like, they had, like, a white bike program in Amsterdam. And they realized that if they gave people those bikes, they wouldn't appreciate them as opposed to someone paying $1, $5. They'd appreciate it a little bit more.
Like a rental price.
Yeah, something like that. And I was always thinking, like, well, you know, like, we can't just, like, give things away. Like, how do we give people the sense of ownership of the space? And that was one thing that I remember was just being like, like, everybody's, oh, we should do this, we should do that, the space. So it's like, take ownership of the space, like, you know, and they did. They finally, like, I feel like they finally did, you know, take a while, you know, for that to happen. But, it was just really interesting. Like, I learned a lot about working with people and about my own style of, you know, engaging in those spaces. And I still have a lot to learn. It's just very difficult, you know. I wouldn't say traumatic, but
it's an experience that left an impression.
Yeah, it did, you know. From Floricanto, from all these spaces, and then just like seeing the importance of having a place for people to just go. And
That's exactly the very roundabout way of me saying that's why it's so important to have these spaces, because now more than ever in the current political climate, we're seeing less and less of them. And the necessity for them.
Yeah, and it's like I guess this is the new approach. It's like, dude, just get a garage and invite your friends over, and like even if it's you're just doing like crafts or something, just like open up your space and just kind of try to have those kind of things happen.
Dude, I mean, I'll say this about myself, and for people that know me personally, they're not surprised. I'm like a fucking curmudgeon. I should live in a garbage can, ask the Grouch style, because I have the capacity, and I actively have to work to not be that kind of fucking asshole, just be like narking on people and hating on them and shit like that, because that is it's very easy to be in that kind of negative space. It takes work to not be in there.
Oh man, it's too easy.
It's too fucking easy. It's like fucking a slip on.
You see, what is it, Dave Chappelle's The Hater Ball Award?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dude. That's what, like, you're like, oh, shit.
It's like, when I choose violence, you know when I choose violence. But all that to say is, you know, I see shit on social media, and I'm like, oh, so that's how people organize themselves these days, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they start run clubs, they start friend clubs, they start all these things through, like, a social media channel, and I'm like... Like, my first inclination is, like, you fucking nerds, like, you know, you can't do things, blah, 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 whatever, right? And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Eric. Like, you did the same thing. You were in digital spaces where you never met somebody in person.
Oh, it's...
And then they became, like, a cool homie and, like, a really close friend after. But that, you know, is exactly to your point. Community organizing and people coming together and forming groups and support looks different, but it's always going to be there and it's always going to be needed.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're talking about the digital space, what do they call it? Net banging?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Well, even a space like Foos Gone Wilds, they got people there like, yo, man, your fucking channel saved me.
Oh,
like,
it's
you
true.
Know, help me get through some hard times. I met my wife in the comment section.
Oh, my God. No way. People have met through that thing?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing, dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those things of like...
Finding a space where you belong, right? And that's even, one of the things.
Like, and even if you don't find a space, why don't you just make your own?
That's true.
It takes time. It takes patience. It takes work to build shit up. But it's one of the things that I keep reminding Olin of our bike rides is like, look, man, I'm not expecting 50 people out here at the get-go. Like, we're going to have bike rides with one or two people, five people, whatever. But if we're consistent and we can keep this going for an extended period of time, then people eventually are going to catch on. Because they're going to see that we're not flakers, that we're consistent, that people are having fun, and the reputation is just going to build itself.
Oh, definitely, dude. That was the first lesson is, like, I learned in Montecito Park when I started showing up and playing bike polo out there.
Hell yeah.
And then, like, everyone would go out to the valley, but we would show up consistently. And then eventually people migrated to our spot. Because they were like, oh, you know,
it's closer.
It's closer, you know, so we don't have to go to the valley. And, it's just like, you definitely be consistent with it. I remember someone hitting me up, and they're like, hey, Steve, I'm part of the HOA, and there's a storefront in 7th and Spring that's just sitting there. Like, you know, they had it to an artist, and all they had to do is maintain the outside space. So basically, all these, like, another opportunity to start another bike hub, they're always out there. It's just like, at this point, I was like, you know, I definitely would want... Like, if you were to take on something like that, it would be really difficult. And, like, I don't know, does LA need more bike spaces like that?
Right. You know, it's a good question to ask. Maybe somebody else could do it. Yes.
Yeah.
If you build it, they will come.
What's that from?
It's Field of Dreams.
Oh, okay.
Where, like, the fucking white guy has a psychotic dream with the ghost that tells him to build a baseball field in the middle of a cornfield.
Damn.
So the ghost can play baseball.
I wonder who built that fucking field.
All the racist baseball players. We don't like your kind around here.
Get out of here.
Even in the afterlife.
Get out to the outside base.
Go chuck some corn.
Oh my God.
But man, thanks again, Steve, for
dude,
like,
yeah, no, this
me
is great.
Come through, chopping it up. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of like the work you do.
Thank you.
I think the only thing I wish I could do is just have more money to buy your shit, man.
Dude, you know what? I tell people like, just hit me up, man. And if you really want something that I have, and like, just ask me, man. I'm like, I won't take offense to it. You know, like I was one of the things I always wanted the pieces of work to kind of go to people I knew. And I was like, oh, because I was always working in like high end places, and I was like, man, none of my friends gonna fucking afford this shit. And like, I can't even afford this stuff, you know. But for the most part, yeah, like, you know, just let me know.
Yeah. Would you say you're like open to like folks coming to you and be like, you want a barter? Like, hey.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I love
the
barter.
Give you a sandwich if you do this.
Oh man, somebody told me to weld something. And then he's like, all he has is 10 bucks. I was like, give me 10 bucks and a sandwich, dude.
Because right now I'm like, I'm trying to get a picnic bench for my place.
Oh, picnic bench. Man, we could probably do it together. I'm not like, I always tell people like, look, so a lot of work on this thing. Like, pick up the material, like, we'll whip it out. Like, come help me grind and kind of like spray paint.
Be my apprentice.
Yeah, like help me out a little bit, because it takes so much time to just do some little thing. And I'm just like, man.
And you get that buy-in. You get that, like, investment in people taking
ownership. That's
true.
That's true. Yeah. No, that's...
Like, damn, I built that with the homie. Like, don't fucking scratch it. Use the coaster.
Use the coaster. It's so funny. It's like a Tecate on top of that thing. Like, sweating. Hurry up and drink it, dude. Why are you taking so long?
So where can folks find you online?
I guess it's just, like, I have a website called steelfabricatedarts.com. .com. And then mostly on Instagram, I just, you know, I do have some business accounts, but I just mostly post on my personal.
You do have a Steel Fabricated account.
Yes. Yeah. And then I'm just like focusing on like getting another website going, like a One Less Bicycle for all the upcycled like bicycle products that
nice.
I'm making. But most of the part, like Instagram, my website has my contact information. And, you know, like, other than the more creative stuff, even if you need just, like, a gate repaired or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Have a listing on Yelp. I have 2 bad reviews.
This fool came in here.
I know. I got 2 bad reviews. I'm telling you, dude, people be net banging even on Yelp. They're always like, fuck.
You know, that is the thing. Like, when people bomb the shit because they're like, this fool didn't do anything wrong. I just fucking hate him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sometimes you got some haters.
Came here smelling like pedo.
I know. Like, I'm working. What do you expect? Yeah, so Yelp, I just do a lot of like gate repairs, a lot of, you know, I meet a lot of artists through there, like people who need an armature, just like even small stuff. Like I love like hanging out here with my friends. If they got a little project they want to work on the weekend, you know, they hit me up. Can make time to like meet up and get things going, and it's, yeah. And, like other than that, I do a lot of different projects.
Fabricating,
so if you, yeah.
Steel welding, yeah, man, yeah. You fucking have a litany of tools at your disposal, like to build a lot of shit.
Yeah. It's all disorganized.
If you want to borrow that S, hit him up too.
Oh yeah, dude, I want to rent that out for parties. That'd be dope.
And, would it be like piñata? Like, put candy in there?
Dude, you know what? We should make a piñata S. That would be the shits. You know what? I've been talking to my friend Ariel. She teaches at Irving. I was like, I used to go to Irving. I was like, I want to do an after-school program.
Hell yeah.
Where we teach kids how to make the draw the S.
Yeah, in different
but
styles.
Right now, the piñata thing would be kind of fun to do. And I was like,
I got a birthday coming up in July.
Oh, so what?
Hey.
Do you know any piñata artists?
Kinda, but they're like you. They get paid for that shit.
Oh, shit. I know, right? Damn it.
I got a staple gun at home. I'll get some cardboard.
Dude, I got some cardboard right there. I do remember how I made the out of steel, so it would be really easy to put that together. But, yeah, man, let me know. We'll get together and try to build that S for your brand.
So thanks again,
yeah,
Steve.
Man, I'm glad
you
came by.
Appreciate you, man. And, thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget, if you want to support the show, drop me some coin on Venmo, on Zelle. Any amount is always welcome. Just a reminder. And shout out to the anonymous donor who actually did donate and sponsor an episode. Thank you, anonymous donor. They actually came in with some, like, fun. So I was like, cool. I'm committed to do another episode.
Nice.
So thanks, y'all, for listening. This is Eric, Orale Bull Heights. I'll catch you next time.